Welcome to episode 6 of The Short Way Home. I'm your host, Michael Chin. This podcast is released in conjunction with my new book, The Long Way Home, from Cowboy Jamboree Press. Cowboy Jamboree Press, good grit lit, home to forthcoming titles, including Steve Lambert's Patron Saint of Birds. Visit them online at cowboyjamboreemagazine.com. Thank you to Adam Van Winkle, founder and general editor, for not only his collaboration on bringing this new book into the world, but the art for the book cover, as well as this podcast artwork. For this episode, I'm focusing on Sasha Banks versus Becky Lynch from NXT TakeOver Unstoppable. This match occurred on May 20th, 2015 at Full Sail University in Orlando. This was just the 5th NXT TakeOver special. Now they're sort of a quintessential piece of WWE programming and obviously specifically the NXT brand. There's been, I don't know if it's up to around 30 now TakeOver specials. This was really early on in kind of developing the brand and developing these recurring specials, which have kind of become known as a home for basically the best mainstream wrestling in the U.S., at least until AEW came along and sort of joined that conversation. But, you know, in terms of WWE programming specifically, it's really hard to put many shows, main roster or NXT or any other brand in between up against the TakeOvers. For this particular show and this particular match, I watched part of it live. This match I saw live. I was cleaning up after a class that I taught. It was a weekly class that I taught when I was in grad school. So basically I was responsible for, teaching this class just once a week, but it was a good, 2.5-3 hour session. So I tuned in because I was interested in the main event of this TakeOver special of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn facing off. I turned it on. I had not been following NXT. At this point, I guess, kind of a dirty little secret, but I'm letting you all in on it, so it's not really much of a secret anymore. But in the early going of NXT, I really didn't follow their product much at all. I only watched, their specials on the WWE Network, and even those not entirely consistently. And so when I did watch them, it's a testament to how good those TakeOver shows were that they held up, that you could watch them without a lot of context for the storylines, that a little video package and a couple promos before the matches actually started was enough to get you hooked, and then the match told the story. In terms of Sasha Banks versus Becky Lynch, I'd seen Sasha Banks work some matches before, and I knew she was good, had a good reputation. Becky Lynch, I didn't know as much about. I'd seen her work the previous TakeOver in a four-way. I remember sort of being lukewarm on her and, not being super excited for this match. And, basically turned it on the big screen in my classroom as I was cleaning up the classroom and kind of, rearranging things and getting ready to head out. And this match just 100% hooked me. I just started, watching it as it was getting going. And, I saw Becky Lynch lock in what I didn't realize then was called the disarm. Her finishing cross arm breaker kind of modification where she's sitting on the arm, and assumed that was going to be the end, that she was taking the title just based on the way the Banks was selling that move and based on how the match had gone. Little did I know that they were kind of just in the middle of the match at that point. But this thing totally sucked me in with kind of the drama. Lynch was the bigger, more powerful performer, which had sort of a fun dynamic because she was also the face. And I think the more default kind of way that fans expect things to go is that the bigger wrestler is kind of the bully heel. But in this case, they played it such that Lynch was clearly with the physical advantage in this match. In terms of just size and strength, but Banks was nonetheless the meaner heel character, and it was really a compelling dynamic there. Lynch was kind of working all these submission holds, and Banks was gutting it out, but also playing the vicious heel and kind of consistently going after submissions of her own and brawling outside the ring. And it was really just a cool kind of fun match. Went 15 and a half minutes, and before I knew it, I sat through pretty much the whole thing, there in my classroom, and had no idea who was going to win before Banks finally got the submission. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, Sasha Banks versus Bayley that happened at the next TakeOver special from Brooklyn is certainly the more famous match, the one most people tend to cite as the best, at least early NXT women's match. You know, and it is great. I think it's kind of a toss-up whether you call this one, you know, the better one, or Banks and Bayley in Brooklyn the better women's match. I think that that's, you know, mostly just kind of a matter of taste. You can make a very reasonable argument for either one of them. I'll say, you know, this one I do end up giving the Duke. I end up picking this one as my favorite, in part just because it just feels so heated. Not that Banks versus Bayley wasn't, but this one, you know, they're both just selling the emotion throughout this thing. And I think the fact that Banks wins, the fact that the heel kind of overcomes, there's something appealing about that to me. Maybe that's my more literary sensibility, but there feels like there's a little bit more of an edge of realism there, and a genuine response from the crowd when they're basically giving a standing ovation to you know, Becky Lynch while she's crying in the ring afterwards because she's so sort of invested in this thing and so hurt. You know, and it really sells that this is not just you know, an athletic performance, but really they were just in a fight, and one that had real stakes that mattered to both the performers. And this is the kind of match, you know, far from the only match. There were a lot of, you know, great NXT women's matches in this era and well beyond it. But I think in large part kind of foreshadows what women's wrestling would become in WWE, where it wasn't, you know, just something that was kind of, you know, set up for a bathroom break or to give lip service to women's equality or, you know, for the sex appeals. It wasn't, you know, the early Attitude Era, but rather legitimately, you know, athletes kind of stealing the show and putting on quite arguably the best match of the night. And arguably a historically important match. And again, I think this match kind of gets forgotten because, you know, with Banks versus Bayley, it had, you know, the more satisfying happy ending with Bayley taking the title. There was a title change, which marks a, you know, a clear kind of paradigm shifting moment in a way. With Banks's, you know, kind of informal send off from NXT, though she would work one more takeover with Bayley. But nonetheless, I still give it to Banks versus Lynch as the better outing, and significantly better than what they would go on to do on the main roster, though they had a very good Hell in a Cell match in 2019, you know, which is certainly worth checking out. But I think it just didn't have nearly the kind of emotional impact and, you know, kind of sense that it really could go either way that this one did. You know, and these women would go on both to big things on the main roster. Banks first, though they both arrived at the same time on the main roster. Banks would be the first woman to lose a pay-per-view main event match, which sounds like sort of a backhanded compliment, but the fact that, you know, her and Charlotte Flair, that their feud got to a point where it could main event was pretty big news, right? And they did perform. I don't think that match was the best the two of them put on, and it's kind of a shame that some pieces kind of, you know, didn't work with them, most notably a table not breaking on cue that kind of messed up the end of the match. But nonetheless, you know, Banks reached a pretty prominent point right there. And then Becky Lynch, of course, would go on to be the first woman to win a WrestleMania main event, which it took her, you know, a lot longer to get to that proper main event spot. But when she got there, obviously, you know, made a huge impact, became the only woman who pinned Ronda Rousey during that initial WWE run that she had. So, you know, obviously, you know, she entered the short list, you know, right alongside, you know, names like Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, as basically the biggest name in WWE in the current day. Some people will debate that or say that, you know, it's a little bit contrived for her, but I think she belongs in that conversation. And so a lot of that starts here in this match with Sasha Banks back at the Performance Center, you know, back when they're both kind of just kind of proving themselves in front of a WWE audience. But okay, so with all of that said, I'm going to read a piece from The Long Way Home. This one is called Getting Ready. This one, it is from the Erica section of the book, so the second section in the book overall, and it leads off that section there. I also think that it's worth noting that this poem was actually originally published by Cowboy Jamboree magazine. This was kind of where I initially established my relationship with the press and kind of in some ways paved the road for the book overall. So it's called Getting Ready. Erica used the grass as a mat for sit-ups, the back deck railing for chin-ups. In lieu of a sparring partner, she wrestled the air. Her imagination might produce an opponent of any size, any strength level, and if she couldn't power out of a full Nelson, she learned to drop down and slip free from the hold. She never practiced in front of her mother when she came home. It was counterintuitive not to want Mom, the wrestler's, help. But Erica wanted to be ready not because of, but for Mom. To see Mom's lower lip tremble the way it did when Erica first showed her she knew how to read, or the time she handed her the brown paper bag with a turkey sandwich with the crust cut off that she'd made for her next road trip. Erica's stepsister, Val, had aspirations of going to college, and Erica had heard her talk on the phone about how she'd leave this podunk town and this podunk family and never have to hear a bunch of mouth breathers talk about wrestling again. The two of them didn't have much in common, just parents who were married and the same rotted roof overhead. Mom told her in confidence they'd meant for the girls to share a bedroom, but Val threw a fit, so Erica wound up sleeping in her stepfather's old office that still held his motley assortment of paperbacks and VHS tapes. Erica hid her shoplifted copies of Pro Wrestling Illustrated behind rows of dusty books. One day, Erica practiced flipping into a fall in the grass. She was smart enough to the wrestling business to understand that when she fell, it was as much about pitching her body as it was anyone throwing her, and a safe landing was her responsibility. She'd advanced from falling flat to somersaults to a front flip, but tended to over-rotate and land on her butt instead of her back. Get enough height like she did a couple times, and she could feel her spine contracting, and knew she couldn't get in the habit of taking falls like that. That afternoon, after her sixth or seventh fall, she heard the laughter from Val's window. Val and her chubby friend with the freckles, and the prettier one who always wore blouses instead of t-shirts, and wore a lipstick that made her mouth look like she were bleeding. Erica might have let it go. Instead, she asked, "You think this is funny?" Eric had been in scraps at school. 2 years earlier, fifth grade, Johnny Reds pinned down a girl and kissed her. Erica punched his nose bloody. The principal told her stepfather this was the first time he'd ever suspended any fifth grader for a full week, and her stepfather assured him she'd face consequences at home, but that was the last she'd heard of it from him. When she got home, Mom sat Erica down and asked her to tell the whole thing. At the end of the story, Mom said, "You shouldn't have done that," but could barely keep from grinning. Mom wouldn't like her fighting her stepsister, but she was already hot in the face and felt blood flowing to her fists. Sometimes she could diffuse that feeling by cussing, but she didn't want to cuss out Val, because that would only make them all laugh. Her stepsister said, "I think you're a joke." Erica knew to be careful, lay the bait and let Val at least equally start the fight. Erica knew she'd wind up in trouble, but she could split the blame. "You think you could take me?" Eric was always taller, but Val was 2 years older, probably 40 pounds heavier. She probably meant to sit on Erica, punch her a few times and humiliate her while her friends laughed. "Or are you chicken?" The last bit was improvised, born out of a wrestling fan's vocabulary of insulting someone's courage to lure her into something foolish. Val clumsily climbed from her window directly into the yard. Her friends didn't come with her, but did lean out to get a better look. Val came at her quickly, both hands shoved forward. Erica took a step to the side, caught Val's left arm, and tripped her leg so her momentum pitched her to the ground. It was Val's own fault that she broke her fall with her right hand, the instant that Erica would, in retrospect, know broke her wrist. Erica pinned her back against Val's left shoulder and cranked up her arm. In wrestling, they always applied the Fujiwara armbar slowly, but Erica pulled Val's arm as hard as she could, as straight as she could, and felt Val's shoulder dislocate. "All right, I give, freak. Get off me." Erica thought she'd enjoy the moment more, but it was there and it was gone, and soon Val's friends were out the window and holding her, the chubbier one eyeing Erica as if wondering if she ought to fight too. Mom came home early. She never cut trips short, but as Erica would understand years later, she had an agreement with her husband that they'd each parent their own daughter and leave the other. Her stepfather must have called and must have told her to get home. Mom listened again, and after Erica was done with her story, said, "You can't go breaking people's arms." Erica started to explain, but Mom knew everything she was going to say. Erica could sense it then, a way she never had before. "You've got to get ready for this world. This world's going to give you every opportunity to screw up. You've got to learn not to if you're going to make something of yourself. Erica couldn't look her mother in the eye. She said she was sorry. But Mom wasn't interested in apologies. Erica understood this too. Not as a reprimand, but a lesson. When Mom repeated, "You've got to get ready." All right. Thank you for listening. The Long Way Home is available from Cowboy Jamboree Press, distributed through Amazon. Follow me on Twitter @MikeTChin or visit MikeTChin.com for more details.